Welcome to this deep dive. And oh man, get ready because we're diving into French Baroque theater.
Ooh, exciting.
Yeah, it is. We're going to explore this play, L'Union Comique by Pierre Corneille. And let me tell you, this play, it's going to bend your mind a little bit.
It really will. And you might be surprised by how much this, like, centuries-old masterpiece has to say about our world, even today.
I think that's one of the things I love about doing these deep dives. You really never know what you're going to uncover.
Yeah, for sure.
So we have a whole stack of sources here.
We do.
Critical analyses, historical context. We even have some modern adaptations.
And they're all going to come together in ways you wouldn't believe.
Okay, so L'Illusion Comique,
Yeah.
a play from 1635
1635, that's right.
that grapples with illusion reality and the power of storytelling.
Sounds familiar, right?
It does sound kind of familiar. But here's the thing that I think is really interesting about all this. It also connects to something that we hear about all the time these days, deepfakes.
That's right.
How does that all fit together?
Well, we'll get to that. But to really appreciate this play, I think we need to take a quick trip back in time to the world Corneille was writing in.
Okay, so time travel engaged. Take us back to the Baroque period.
Right?
What was the vibe like back then?
Okay, so imagine Europe just in a constant state of flux.
Okay.
You've got these wars of religion that have just like rocked the continent.
Oh, wow.
And then at the same time, you've got this scientific revolution that's challenging like everything people thought they knew about the universe.
Yeah.
So it's no wonder that this whole era was obsessed with this idea of illusion.
So not exactly a time of peace and tranquility then.
Not at all. Not even
Okay.
close. Think like dramatic contrasts, elaborate art and architecture, and just this constant blurring between what's real and what's not. It's all a reflection of just the uncertainty of the time.
You know what, though? That kind of sounds relatable.
Doesn't it?
I mean, think about like the world today. Things are changing so fast. It's hard to know what's real sometimes, especially online.
Yeah, you got that right. And L'Illusion Comique really captures that feeling perfectly. And this whole backdrop of instability just makes it the perfect setting for a play that's all about illusion and make-believe. Which brings us to the mastermind behind it all, Pierre Corneille.
Ah, yes. The father of French tragedy.
That's him.
You know, you would think then that L'Illusion Comique would be a total tearjerker, but I'm sensing that it's anything but.
You were picking up what we're putting down.
Yeah.
Corneille was a master of twisting expectations.
Okay.
And this play really bends genres. It blends comedy, romance, fantasy.
Interesting.
Yeah, he even criticized its structure later on.
Ah.
But honestly, that's what makes it so brilliant, especially for a modern audience.
Oh. Okay, intriguing. What is it about the structure that's so different?
Right, so picture this, a play
Okay.
within a play,
Uh-huh.
within a play.
Wow.
Maybe even another play in there for good measure.
Okay.
So it starts with this guy, Pridiment, a father who's like desperately searching for his lost son.
Okay.
He goes to this magician, Alcandre,
Yeah.
who's like, "Hey, I can show you these visions of your son's life." And those visions
Oh.
are plays being performed right in front of him.
Whoa, my mind is officially blown. So is Corneille like saying, hey, life itself is kind of a performance, isn't it?
Yeah, you got it.
Wait a minute, is that whole Theatrum Munda thing?
Yes, Theatrum Mundi, the world is a stage. Huge concept in Baroque literature.
Right.
And L'Illusion Comique takes it to like a whole new level.
Yeah.
Corneille uses this play within a play structure. It's called mise en abyme, just to constantly remind us that we're never quite sure what's real and what's an illusion.
Okay. I am seeing those Russian nesting dolls you mentioned in a whole new light. It's like peeling back layers of reality only to find another layer underneath. So how does this magician Alcandre fit into all of this? He sounds like a pretty pivotal character.
He is. He's like the puppet master,
Okay.
controlling all these illusions that we see. Think of him as like the ultimate director, orchestrating the show as Pridiment's life. And Corneille is playing with some pretty heavy stuff here,
Yeah.
asking us to question if what we believe to be true is just an illusion.
And that ties back to our world today, right?
Oh, yeah, big time.
I mean, think about all the ways that we are constantly just bombarded with information,
Yeah.
filtered through algorithms and social media. It's hard to know what to trust.
Exactly. Corneille was way ahead of his time in exploring these ideas.
Yeah.
But it's not all just heady philosophy. He also throws in these incredible characters who are way more than just like these stock figures.
Yeah, you mentioned some standouts in the notes. Mattamore, the braggart soldier.
Yes.
Klindor, the shape-shifting son. And Lice, the cunning servant.
That's right.
Let's start with Mattamore. I'm already intrigued.
Well, Mattamore is a total scene stealer. So imagine a character who's all boast and bluster,
Okay.
spinning these wild tales of heroism that are, shall we say, a little embellished.
I love it.
He's basically the Baroque era Deadpool.
Wait, so Matamor is like the OG anti-hero? I love that. So how does he fit into a play that's all about illusion and deception?
Well, he's almost like a parody of the traditional hero.
Okay.
Which was pretty bold for Corneille's time.
Yeah.
He's constantly playing a part, trying to project this image of himself that may not match reality.
Yeah.
Think about how many people do that today, crafting these perfect online personas that don't always reflect who they truly are.
It's like he's anticipating our modern day obsession with crafting the perfect image online.
Right.
Okay, so we've got Matamor, the OG influencer. What about Klindor? He sounds like a fascinating character.
Klindor is all about transformation.
Okay.
He's been a thief, a servant, even a lover, constantly taking on new roles and identities.
Yeah.
He doesn't just like change. He embraces each transformation fully.
So he's the ultimate chameleon.
Yes.
In today's world, he'd be like the king of the gig economy, constantly reinventing himself.
Precisely. That idea of rejecting a fixed identity, choosing change over stability, that really resonated with the Baroque mindset. Remember, this was a time when everything felt up in the air.
Right.
Klindor embodies that feeling of uncertainty and the excitement of embracing the unknown.
It makes you wonder, if he were around today, would he be the ultimate freelancer, hopping from one gig to the next with like a different online persona for each?
That's a fascinating thought, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then you have Lise.
Yes.
Who's not your typical servant.
Okay.
She's sharp, manipulative, and honestly way more cunning than her so-called superiors.
Ooh. I love a character who subverts expectations. She sounds like a total powerhouse.
Mm.
What can you tell us about her?
Well, she's constantly pulling the strings.
Okay.
Using her wit and intelligence to get what she wants.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like Corneille is hinting that true power doesn't always lie where we think it does.
All right.
Sometimes it's the people who are underestimated who hold the real power.
She's a reminder that we should never underestimate anyone, right? I mean, sometimes the quietest ones in the room are the ones making all the moves behind the scenes.
Absolutely. Corneille gave us these amazing characters that still feel relevant today.
Yeah.
They remind us that human nature, with all its complexities and contradictions, is timeless.
Okay, so we've got a play set in a time obsessed with illusion, a play within a play structure that constantly keeps us guessing, and characters who are way ahead of their time.
It's a lot.
I am officially hooked.
Good.
But we still haven't talked about that mind-blowing connection to deepfakes.
Don't worry, we're getting there.
Okay.
But first, let's delve a little deeper into like the core themes of illusion comique.
Okay.
We're going to see how Corneille takes those Baroque anxieties about reality and illusion.
Okay.
And weaves them into a story that's both entertaining and thought-provoking.
Sounds good to me. Lead the way.
Let's go.
All right, so we've established that illusion comique is basically like a Baroque fever dream.
Yeah.
Full of illusion, mistaken identities, and characters who could give today's influencers a run for their money.
That's right. Where do we go from here?
Well, remember that Theatrum Mundi concept we talked about?
Yeah.
The world as a stage?
Uh-huh.
Corneille takes that idea and runs wild with it. He doesn't just like tell us life is a performance.
Right. He shows us how it actually plays out in the lives of his characters.
Okay, I'm ready for the show. But how exactly does he do that? I mean, it's one thing to say, like, life is a stage, but it's another to actually make that come alive in a play.
Right. Well, he uses those layers of illusion.
Okay.
That play within a play structure
mm-hmm.
to constantly blur the lines between what's real and what's not.
Mm-hmm.
And Alcandre, the magician, is key here. He's like the ultimate director.
Okay.
Shaping Pridiman's perception of his son through these elaborate illusions.
So it's like we're watching Pridiman watch a play, but we're also watching a play ourselves.
Exactly.
My head is spinning.
That's the point. Corneille wants us to question like everything we see.
Yeah.
He's asking, what is real and who gets to decide?
Right.
These were huge questions in the Baroque period, a time when people were grappling with these new scientific discoveries and questioning traditional authority.
It's making me think about how easily our own perceptions can be manipulated. Especially today with all the fake news and misinformation floating around online. It's like we're all living in our own versions of reality shaped by the information we consume.
That's a really insightful connection.
Yeah.
And it speaks to just how timeless Corneille's ideas are. Yeah. He was wrestling with these questions centuries before the internet even existed.
Right.
But he also shows us that these illusions, these stories we tell ourselves, they can have real world consequences.
Right. It's not just some like abstract philosophical debate.
Yeah.
Think about how Pridiman's feelings about his son are completely transformed by the illusions Alcandre creates. He goes through this whole roller coaster of emotions, despair, anger, even joy, all based on what he's being shown.
And that highlights the power of storytelling.
Yeah.
Corneille is showing us that stories, even if they're not entirely true,
right,
can have a profound impact on our lives. Just like a skilled playwright can manipulate an audience's emotions.
Yeah.
So too can our own internal narrative shape the way we experience the world.
Okay, so the Theta Mundi concept isn't just an intellectual exercise. No.
Corneille makes it visceral. He shows us how these ideas play out in the lives of his characters. Mm. It's like he's saying, hey, pay attention because the stories you believe have the power to shape your reality.
Absolutely. And this brings us to that mind-blowing connection we've been teasing.
Okay.
Deepfakes.
Rue deepfake.
Remember how we talked about Alcandre being like a puppet master?
Yeah.
Controlling the illusions we see?
Uh-huh.
Well, deepfakes are kind of like that.
Okay.
They're a modern-day form of illusion, a way of manipulating perceptions using technology.
Hold on. Are you saying that a play written in 1635 is somehow connected to deepfakes?
I am.
I need to hear more about this.
Okay, so think about it. Deepfakes are videos where someone's face is digitally superimposed onto another person's body.
Right.
The technology has gotten so good that it can be almost impossible to tell what's real and what's fake.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And that plays directly into that Baroque fascination with the powers of the false.
The ability to create illusions that are so convincing, they blur the lines between truth and deception.
Whoa. Okay, so you're saying Corneille was basically predicting deepfakes back in the 17th century.
Well, he wasn't predicting them literally, of course.
Okay.
But he was exploring those same underlying anxieties about the nature of reality and the power of illusion. Lulu Jean Comique is like a proto-deepfake, showing us how easily our perceptions can be manipulated and how those manipulations can have real-world consequences.
It's a bit unsettling, to be honest. I mean, if we can't even trust what we see with our own eyes, then what can we trust? It's like that whole seeing is believing thing has gone out the window.
It's a valid concern. And Corneille's play seems to be warning us about the seductive power of illusion and the need for a healthy dose of skepticism.
Yeah.
It's like he's saying, don't just accept what you're seeing or hearing. Question everything.
So it's not just a play about illusion and make-believe.
No.
It's a play about media literacy, about the importance of critical thinking in a world where we're constantly being bombarded with information.
Exactly. And that's what makes it so relevant today. In the age of deepfakes and fake news,
right,
Corneille's insights are more important than ever. He's reminding us to be discerning viewers, to question the narratives we're being presented with.
Yeah.
And to be aware of the ways in which technology can be used to manipulate our perceptions.
This is blowing my mind. Okay, so we've got the Theatre Mundi concept, deepfakes, the power of storytelling. It's all connected.
It is.
But Corneille doesn't stop there, right? There are all these other themes woven throughout the play.
Right.
Father-son relationships, ambition, love.
Yeah.
How do those fit into this Baroque puzzle?
They add depth and complexity to the story.
Okay.
Showing us that even amidst all this illusion and uncertainty,
right,
there are still these universal human experiences that ground us. Think about Prettyman's journey. He's driven by his love for his son.
Uh-huh.
But he also has to learn to let go of his preconceived notions.
Yeah.
And accept Klindor for who he is, even with all his flaws.
That's so relatable. I mean, who hasn't had to learn that lesson at some point? Sometimes the people we love the most surprise us, and we have to learn to accept them for who they are, not who we want them to be.
Exactly. And then you have Klindor, who embodies that Baroque spirit of rejecting a fixed path and embracing change.
Mm-hmm.
He's driven by ambition, a desire to experience all that life has to offer. In a way, he's the ultimate individualist, forging his own path in a world that's constantly shifting.
He's almost like a modern-day entrepreneur, right? Always hustling, always looking for the next opportunity. It's like he's saying, forget stability, I'm going to make my own luck.
It's a fascinating way to look at it. And then there's Lise, who shows us that true power doesn't always come from status or wealth.
Right.
She's a woman in a position of servitude.
Yeah.
But she uses her intelligence and cunning to gain influence and shape events.
Hmm.
She's a reminder that we should never underestimate anyone, regardless of their social standing.
It sounds like Corneille is giving us a glimpse into the complexities of human nature.
He is.
Showing us that even in a world obsessed with illusion and deception, there are still these fundamental human desires for love, for ambition, for connection that drive us.
You're absolutely right. And it's these human elements that make Lulu Jean Comique so much more than just a clever philosophical exercise. It's a play that's full of life, full of humor, and full of insights that are as relevant today as they were in the 17th century.
I am loving this deep dive.
Me too.
We've gone from Baroque philosophy to deep fakes, from play within a play structures to cunning servants who could run the world.
It's a lot to take in.
I can't wait to see what other surprises Corneille has in store for us.
Right.
But I think we need a moment to process all of this.
I agree. Let's take a pause and let these ideas settle in. We'll be back soon to finish our exploration of L'Illusion Comique.
Okay, I think my brain has finally caught up. This deep dive into L'Illusion Comique has been a whirlwind of ideas.
It has.
Illusion reality, deep fakes, you name it. And to think it all started with a play written over 400 years ago.
It really is amazing. It's a testament to Corneille's genius, isn't it?
Yeah.
He managed to create a work that's not only entertaining.
Right.
But also deeply thought-provoking, full of insights that still resonate with us even today.
It's like he tapped into something fundamental about human nature.
Yeah.
Our fascination with illusion, our need to make sense of the world through stories, our constant struggle to figure out what's real.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And he does it all with these incredible characters,
right,
who are so much more than just symbols or archetypes. They feel real, relatable, even though they're living a world that's vastly different from our own.
Speaking of those characters, I wanted to circle back to Matamor, the braggart soldier.
Yeah.
He's such a larger-than-life figure full of boasts and tall tales.
Yeah.
What do you make of him?
Well, on the surface, he's a comic figure.
Right.
Full of bluster and bravado.
Yeah.
But I think there's something more to him than that.
Mm-hmm.
I think Corneille is using him to kind of satirize the idea of the traditional hero.
Okay.
The one who's always strong and fearless.
Yeah.
Matamor is flawed, insecure.
Uh-huh.
Even cowardly at times. And yet there's something endearing about him.
Right.
Something that makes us root for him, even when we know he's full of hot air.
It's like he's a prototype for all those lovable rogues we see in movies and TV shows today.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
The Han Solos, the Jack Sparrows.
Yeah.
The characters who break the rules but still have a heart of gold. We love them because they're not perfect, because they remind us that it's okay to be flawed, to stumble and make mistakes.
Exactly. And in a way, Matamor embodies that spirit of the Baroque period.
Okay.
The questioning of authority, the willingness to poke fun at tradition. He's a reminder that we don't always have to take things at face value.
Yeah.
That sometimes a healthy dose of skepticism is in order.
He's also a great example of how Corneille uses humor to explore serious themes.
Right.
Matamor makes us laugh.
Yeah.
But he also makes us think about the nature of identity, about the masks we wear, the stories we tell ourselves, and the world.
And then you have Klindor, the shape-shifting sun. He's the opposite of Matamor in many ways. He's constantly changing,
right,
adapting to new situations, embracing the unknown.
He's like the ultimate freelancer, right? Always on the move, always reinventing himself. It makes me think about how much our world values adaptability and flexibility.
Yeah.
In today's job market, you have to be willing to wear many hats to constantly learn new skills and pivot when necessary.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And Klindor's journey speaks to that. He's not afraid of change. In fact, he seems to thrive on it. He rejects a fixed path, choosing instead to embrace the possibilities of the moment. It's a very Baroque mindset.
Yeah.
This idea that identity is fluid, that we're constantly evolving and becoming.
He makes me think about all those people who've built careers by leveraging their online presence. They're constantly curating their image, adapting to new trends, and finding creative ways to monetize their skills. It's like Klindor's playbook for the digital age.
It's a fascinating comparison, isn't it?
Heck.
And then you have Lice, who's probably my favorite character in the play. She's a servant, but she's also the smartest and most resourceful person on stage. She's always one step ahead.
Okay.
Manipulating situations to her advantage.
She's the ultimate example of a character who defies expectations. You think she's going to be a typical subservient servant, but then she turns out to be the one pulling the strings, outsmarting everyone around her. I think a lot of people can relate to that feeling of being underestimated.
Absolutely. And Corneille is making a point about the nature of power. He's showing us that true power doesn't always come from wealth or social status.
Right.
Sometimes it comes from intelligence, from wit, from the ability to see what others miss.
Lee's is a reminder that we should never underestimate anyone and that true power often lies in unexpected places.
Exactly. And it's through these characters, Matamor, Klindor, Lee's, and all the others, that Corneille brings the themes of L'Illusion Comique to life. It's not just a play about ideas. It's a play about people, about their struggles, their desires, their triumphs, and their failures. And that's what makes it so enduring, so universally relatable.
This deep dive has been a real eye-opener. I feel like I have a whole new understanding of L'Illusion Comique and its relevance to our world today. But if I had to sum it all up, what would you say is like the key takeaway?
I think Corneille is reminding us to be skeptical, to question the narratives we're being presented with.
Yeah.
And to remember that perception is a powerful tool that can be used to both enlighten and deceive. In a world where technology is blurring the lines between reality and illusion, those lessons are more important than ever.
It makes you think, doesn't it? If Corneille were alive today, would he be writing about deepfakes?
Probably.
About social media, about the ways in which technology is shaping our perceptions of the world?
He'd probably have a field day with it. But even though he was writing centuries ago, his insights about illusion reality and the power of storytelling are incredibly relevant to our modern world.
So to wrap things up, I'd say Le Zone Comique is a must-read for anyone who wants to understand the power of illusion, the importance of critical thinking, and the timeless complexities of human nature.
I couldn't agree more. It's a play that will stay with you long after you finish reading it, prompting you to question what you see, to challenge your assumptions, and to marvel at the enduring power of great storytelling.
And on that note, I think it's time to bring this deep dive to a close. Thanks for joining us on this journey into the world of French Baroque theater. Until next time, keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep diving deep.